I'm Jason Rugard of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. Welcome to a special summer show. Every Friday, I'll be taking a week-by-week look back at the summer of 1990. This was a box office season that was amongst the most competitive and influential in movie-going history. On each show, I'll be chronicling the performance, critical response, and historical relevance of the biggest hits and costliest misfires that shaped the summer of 1990. Episode 11, August 3rd to the 5th, 1990. On today's show, we'll look at a film that in part revived a dead genre, and another film that showcased the talent of rising stars in front of and behind the camera. Let's begin. Our first film is Young Guns 2.
It is therefore considered by the court that William H. Bonney be hanged till he be dead, dead, dead.
You can go to hell, hell, hell. When I started, amigos.
You're not dead.
Do I look dead?
The entire country is reading about our territory every day in the journals.
Should we give him a proper burial?
And they're not reading about our growth towards statehood.
I never stole a horse from someone I didn't like.
Nah, you just kill him.
What they are reading about is a 21-year-old delinquent.
What scum?
Who is making us look like imbeciles.
Politicians, bankers, cattle kings. Scum.
I got 18 dimes in each barrel, boy.
You're starting to believe what they're writing about you, aren't you?
Bob!
You wrote a 15-year-old boy straight into his grave.
Goodbye, Bob. Best dollar 80 I ever spent.
And the rest of us, straight to hell.
I don't take to tenderfoots in my gang.
It ain't your gang, Dave.
It's how you achieve $1,000, Mr. Garrett, to catch one.
And all the resources you need to carry out the extermination.
Just playing the game, Doc.
Step one, William H. Bonney.
Even their horses are crazy. We'll give them a game, Lauren.
They're starting to surround us. We got to get out of here.
Dave, it's your gang.
What? It ain't my gang, it's your gang. It's always been your gang.
Emilio Estevez, Kiefer Sutherland, Lou Diamond Phillips, Christian Slater, Balthazar Getty, Alan Ruck, James Coburn, and William Peterson as Pat Garrett.
Yoo-hoo. I'll make you famous.
Young Guns 2.
Young Guns 2 is an American Western and the self-titled sequel to Young Guns. It debuted in the third position on the weekend box office charts with $8 million, $17 million adjusted, and totaled out at $44, or $94 million in today's money. It nearly matched the success of the original film, which is a highly respectable gross considering that in 1990, the Western wasn't considered a viable genre. Between Young Guns 2, Back to the Future 3, and Dances with Wolves, studios began rethinking the potential in the once popular genre, leading the way to its eventual comeback in 1992 with Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven. The film stars Emilio Estevez, Kiefer Sutherland, Lou Diamond Phillips, and Christian Slater, and features William Peterson as Pat Garrett. It follows the life of Billy the Kid, once again played by Emilio Estevez, in the years following the events of the first film, in which Billy became part of the Regulators, a group of six highly skilled gunmen avenging the death of John Tunstall. And the years leading up to Billy's documented death take place in this film. However, it's told by Bushy Bill Roberts, a man who in the 1940s appeared claiming to be the very real Billy the Kid. It has been reported that Kiefer Sutherland, faced with scheduling conflicts, refused to return to the Young Gun franchise unless his character died in the movie's ending. Writer John Fusco fought vehemently against this demand, but ultimately rewrote the scene to accommodate Sutherland's schedule. Emilio Estevez approached John Bon Jovi and asked for his permission to use the song Wanted Dead or Alive on the soundtrack. But Bon Jovi didn't feel the song's lyrics were appropriate. Instead, he was inspired by the project and resolved to write a new song for the film that would be even more in keeping with the period and setting. So, He instead quickly wrote the song Blaze of Glory and performed it on acoustic guitar in the middle of the Utah desert for Estevez. Blaze of Glory would go on to reach number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. The tune was also nominated for Best Original Song at that year's Oscar ceremonies, losing out to Dick Tracy's Madonna-led number, I'll Always Get My Man. As awesome as the John Bon Jovi song is, the score from Alan Silvestri is a beautiful bit of film composing, and it's an even more impressive achievement considering that Silvestri had already scored the Western theme Back to the Future 3 earlier that summer. Director Jeff Murphy and lead actor Emilio Estevez would later team up for Free Jack, which I consider to be a campy cult classic. However, Estevez's star began to fade in the mid-1990s, and that was most likely the reason there was never a Young Guns 3. Thus far, this property has not been up for a reboot, remake, or outright sequel. This seems like a very likely move to make, considering the nostalgia factor that drives a lot of decisions in Hollywood these days. I wouldn't mind seeing these characters again, although the producers would be hard-pressed to find a young, magnetic actor to replace Estevez, who has always seemed like he's Tom Cruise's brother, not Charlie Sheen. Our next film is Mo Betta Blues.
What did you call me? Bleak, how in the hell can you call me by her name?
Boy, they got all kind of people in this club tonight. Look at that little ugly guy at the bar. Hey, fella! Trying to sneak in here in the color section. I see you.
He's a horrible manager. Everybody can see that but you.
We thank you for coming because you didn't have to come. You could have stayed home and watched Arsenio Hall or something.
Mo Betta Blues.
Mo Betta Blues marked the highly anticipated follow-up film from director Spike Lee following the commercial and critical success of Do the Right Thing. Blues had a considerably larger budget than any previous Lee film at $10 million. The film debuted in 7th place with $4.5 million, or around $9 million adjusted. But it only played in 544 locations, a fraction of the nearly 1,800 screens that Young Guns 2 booked. But it was Blues who claimed the highest per-screen average of the weekend, suggesting that screenings, however few, were packed houses. The film quickly sank off the box office charts within 3 weeks of release, totaling out at $16 million, or $34 million in today's money. It turned a small profit for Universal Pictures, who would fund the next three out of four Lee-directed pictures. Mo Betta Blues is a musical drama starring Denzel Washington, Wesley Snipes, and Spike Lee, who also directed. Blues is remarkable for being the first of four collaborations between Spike Lee and his lead actor Denzel Washington. They would subsequently reunite for Malcolm X, He Got Game, and Inside Man. The film follows a period in the life of fictional jazz trumpeter Bleak Gilmore, as a series of bad decisions results in his jeopardizing both his relationships and his playing career. The film focuses on themes of friendship, loyalty, honesty, cause and effect, and ultimately salvation. The film was released 5 months after the death of comedian Robin Harris, who has a large role here, and is dedicated to his memory. Blues is an ode to jazz above all else, and the sweet sounds of composer-musician Branford Marsalis and Terrence Blanchard. I had the opportunity to see Blanchard in an intimate concert some years back. It was sometime after he released his album that coincided with the Spike Lee-directed documentary about the chaos in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. After the show, I waited in line to get the artist's autograph on my CD. While I waited patiently, a guy cut in front of me in line. At this point, I'm a few cocktails deep, and I tell the guy to cut the shit out and get to the back of the line. I finally get my opportunity to meet Blanchard, and while we're talking, he sees the guy who cut in line, and then calls him up to the front and hugs him. Turns out they were longtime friends, and now I'm the asshole standing there with my little signed paraphernalia and the big foot in my mouth. Mo Better Blues is an offbeat and largely forgotten flick in the long career of Spike Lee and Denzel Washington, for that matter. To revisit it now is to see two very talented artists at a time in their careers when their future was uncertain within the industry. From that perspective, it's fascinating, but as a movie experience, I find it a bit dull and lacking the colorful characters that typically populate Lee's films. The movie looks gorgeous thanks to cinematographer Ernest Dickerson, and the capable cast featuring Wesley Snipes, Samuel L. Jackson, John Turturro, and Ruben Blades do more for the movie than it does for them. Mo Better Blues is better left forgotten, unless you're a Washington or a Lee completist. That'll do it for today's show. Thanks for listening.
Our next movie is named Mo Better Blues, and this is the first Spike Lee film since Do the Right Thing, which we both thought was one of the best films of the last 10 years. So any film that Spike Lee made next was probably going to suffer by comparison. It's the second novel syndrome, even though this is actually his fourth film. But Lee has made a wise decision and made a completely different kind of film this time, a downbeat love story with a lot of music in it, starring Denzel Washington as a jazz man who betrays both of the women in his life, but is stubbornly loyal to the one guy he shouldn't trust, his manager, played by Spike Lee. I thought those scenes belonged in another movie, especially since the movie hurries past the details about how Washington's character gets from a low point in his life into the world of that happy ending. There seems to be an act missing somehow. I was also disappointed, I guess, that this was not another great masterpiece like Do the Right Thing. It's more of a love story and more of a film about music instead of a fearless look at the way we live now. But you can't criticize a film for what it isn't. What this movie is a good-looking and well-acted film with a lot of great music and strong performances. What it is not is a film with a clear sense of mission and a compelling storyline to take us from the beginning to the end. It's often a feast for the eyes and the ears, but it's not an example of Spike Lee's best work.
I think there's a lot of things going on here, maybe too many things. Uh-huh. Maybe this needed another time through the typewriter. But the second time that I watched it, I guess I saw what was there of positive value, and there's a lot. The Denzel Washington character is an interesting character. He is playing a guy who is not particularly likable. Also, you say a feast for the eyes, and it surely is that. This guy doesn't know how to make uninteresting shots. There was one problem that I had, which was that he has a music track all the way through this picture. Mm-hmm. He didn't do the right thing. There I thought it worked. Here I wanted some quiet for the intimate scenes between the characters, and that would be my one big complaint.
Well, one other problem that I had was some of the scenes are clearly improvised, and they aren't improvised very well. It's like that feeling you get when you see improvisation on the stage, and each actor essentially is saying to the other actor, well, what do you want me to say? Nevertheless, I'm disappointed in it because I think Spike Lee's work has been so high, but I would recommend it simply on the basis of the fact that it is worth going to see. There's a lot of good stuff.
I'll tell you, one payoff sequence for me was the Cinda Williams singing.
Are you recommending the film?
Yes.
You are.
Yes, with reservations, yeah.